STR Podcasts and Radio are brought to you through the generous support of people just like you. You can support these podcasts by making a gift online at str.org or by phone at 1-800-2-REASON.
This is Alan with the Thinking Out Loud podcast for July 1st, 2011. Now, to a lot of people, saying that homosexuals are born that way is as axiomatic as saying the earth revolves around the sun. Right? I mean, there can't be any possible reason, any rational reason that could exist to reject a claim like this. In fact, people say that the only holdouts are those people who are either ignorant of the scientific facts, homophobics, or just bigots. And of course, it usually turns out that these people are identified as Christians. But what I want to argue in this podcast is that this claim that homosexuals are born that way is full of problems. In fact, before we consider what those problems are, I want to offer actually a tactical suggestion. You see, many Christians get very defensive when someone says that homosexuality is inborn. And what they try to do is they try to respond with reasons why that claim is false. Now, I understand the temptation to do that, but it's actually a mistake to do that because there's really no need to answer this challenge since the claim that they're offering is just that. It's just a claim. And a claim without evidence is just an opinion. And so there's no reason to think it's true, right? In order for them to offer an argument, they have to offer not just a claim or an opinion, but they have to offer reasons for why that claim they think is true. And so instead of defending your convictions, make them defend their claim, right? Since they're the ones who are trying to make the point to say that homosexuals are born that way, it's their job then to try to provide evidence for it or to try to prove their point. And so I simply, and again, I've studied this stuff a lot, and so I actually have reasons why I might think the claim is true. But even when I'm presented with this challenge, I simply ask the person, I say, well, what evidence do you have that homosexuals are born that way? What scientific arguments, what scientific reasons do you have for thinking that homosexuals are born that way? Now, many times they won't have an answer. And the reason is because they're just simply repeating what they've heard other people say, but they don't have any evidence to back it up. It's almost like an urban legend. They're just repeating what they've heard other people say. And so sometimes what they end up doing is they just simply punt to experience, right? They'll say, well, you know, I know that homosexuals often report feeling different from their peers at a very early age, you know, and that, of course, suggests that they were born that way. Or if you happen to be talking to a homosexual, they usually will say something like, yeah, you know, I just always remember, you know, growing up as a kid, I always just felt a little bit different than everybody else. Now, I think this is, you know, I think personal stories give insight as to kind of their experience and their perspective. But personal experience is rarely an indicator of scientific truth. And certainly it can't count as evidence that homosexuality is biologically determined. I mean, just because somebody feels like they've just felt different from the beginning, it doesn't, you know, prove scientifically that this is a scientific fact. And so before you even begun discussing the merits of the claim, remember that they're the ones who need to shoulder the responsibility of providing evidence for their view. Okay, you are not responsible for providing evidence for your view because oftentimes they're the ones who are making the claim that homosexuals are born that way. Okay, so with that initial tactic in mind, let's look at three problems I think there are to this claim. Now, the first problem is probably the most serious. And that is, if you just do a simple scientific fact check, it demonstrates that there's no study out there that has ever proven that homosexuality is biologically determined. Okay, nor is there, you know, a preponderance of evidence or scientific studies that suggest this at all. Okay, now there's been probably about a few decades now where researchers, in fact, even many of them who are pro-gay or gay themselves, have sought to discover a gay gene. And after decades of doing this, they have come up empty. And again, this can just be demonstrated by simply looking at the scientific literature. In fact, I would say that it's uncommon for researchers these days to even think that a gene can determine any behavior whatsoever. Now, what a lot of research tries to do is they try to correlate brain anatomy and physiology with homosexual behavior. But of course, correlation doesn't prove causation. In other words, even if there are parts of the brain in homosexuals that is different than that of heterosexuals, well, that just might suggest that their behavior has changed their brain, not necessarily the other way around. Now, the reason this is even possible is due to this concept or this idea known as neuroplasticity. And this is just simply the lifelong ability of the brain to change in response to the environment, to change in response to brain injury, to behaviors, or just simply acquiring knowledge. And this is something that over the years when I worked in hospital-based physical therapy, and I saw people who had strokes, which caused, you know, permanent death and damage to parts of their brain, and they were, you know, they lost their function to move their arms or legs or even to sit upright. Over time, with practice, they were able to have their brain adapt through neuroplasticity in order to allow it to use other parts of their brain and to develop new kinds of connections in order to facilitate new movements with the limbs that were originally unable to be able to move. So I know this. I've seen this happen firsthand. Now, another example that's often cited is people who are blind. And what these blind people end up doing is they use their fingers to read Braille. And consequently, they have a different brain morphology simply because their behavior differs from sighted people. Right? I mean, they're using their fingers to a degree much greater than that of people who are sighted to feel and to use, you know, tactile sensation. And so as a result, the parts of the brain that are responsible for being aware of that tactile sensation, those parts of the brain change, literally, and physically change. And so as a result, you know, we know that the neuroplasticity of the brain is a real thing. And that's why a lot of the studies that try to show some sort of correlation with brain physiology or brain anatomy with behavior are deemed by a lot of researchers, in fact, even pro-gay researchers, as inconclusive and don't prove that homosexuality is something that you're born with. Now, again, a lot of pro-gay researchers and organizations are actually acknowledging this. And, you know, I can give individual examples, but probably the best way to address this without taking up too much time is just looking at a good summary just a broader organization like the American Psychological Association, which, of course, looks at many different studies. And because they're a pro-gay organization, I think it works on our behalf to use them as an example. Now, back in 1998, the APA, the American Psychological Association, held the belief that, they felt that the scientific literature proved that homosexuals are born that way. And in one of their pamphlets where they had a position statement, they said, quote, "There is considerable recent evidence to suggest that biology, including genetic or inborn hormonal factors, play a significant role in a person's sexuality," end quote. So that was their position about, 13 or so years ago. However, there's been, you know, a decade or more of scientific research now that has come out and has pretty much debunked that idea. And as a result, the APA has had to revise their position. And in 2009, they, in that same pamphlet, they revised their position and they stated this. And of course, they kind of backtracked. They said this, quote, "Although much research has examined the possible genetic, hormonal, developmental, social, or cultural influences on sexual orientation, no findings have emerged that permit scientists to conclude that sexual orientation is determined by any particular factor or factors," end quote. And so, again, this is a remarkable concession that a pro-gay group like the APA would revise their statement. And again, the only reason they would do this is if there was a preponderance of evidence that necessitated this position change. And of course, that's what we find in the scientific literature. So at least they're being honest with that. So that's the first problem with this whole claim that homosexuals are born that way, and that is simply that the scientific evidence for that claim is just not there. A second problem with this claim is that even if it's true, it doesn't prove that the behavior, homosexual behavior, is moral. In fact, consider the fact that researchers have discovered genes that they believe contribute to alcoholism, unfaithfulness, violent behavior, and, you know, the list goes on. Well, are we to believe that because there's a genetic contribution to these behaviors, or even if they were genetically determined, that somehow they should be regarded as morally appropriate? Well, of course not, right? So proving homosexual behavior is appropriate by appealing to a genetic determinant is equally unjustified. In fact, finding a genetic cause to homosexuality worries a lot of gay rights advocates. And the reason is because not all genetically induced characteristics are normal or healthy. Right? Abnormalities in an individual's DNA, whether by mutation or the addition or subtraction of a chromosome, lead to genetic disorders such as cystic fibrosis, Down syndrome, cancer, and many, many more genetically determined disease conditions. And so if a genetic origin to homosexuality is discovered in the future, well, the next obvious question that arises is whether it is an abnormal expression, or it's a mutation, or represents some sort of disease process. And of course, this is why many pro-gay researchers are concerned about finding a genetic cause, because, well, what if they do find it and it turns out that this is a disease process? Moreover, if a cause could be identified, you know, directly, then it can also be targeted by genetic therapy or other methods that, quote-unquote, cure that condition. And testing that could be done that could detect homosexuality in utero, right? So women who are pregnant, you know, for example, maybe there'd be a genetic test that they could do. They could determine whether they have a gay fetus. That could cause many people to have abortions of these gay fetuses, or, you know, obviously you're not gay when you're a fetus, but you know what I mean. And so as a result, a lot of pro-gay researchers have kind of toned down their attempts to discover a biological cause because they're concerned about this. Now, a third problem with the claim that homosexuals are born that way stems from the mere existence that there is an ex gay community. Okay, now I know a lot of people don't like the term ex-gay, but just for lack of a better word, I think you know what I'm talking about. Simply that there are people out there who exist that are former homosexuals. You see, if homosexuality is, as many pro-gay advocates state, as inescapable as eye color, well then, how do they explain former homosexuals? I mean, eye color is genetic, and it is something that you're born with, and it is something that you can change. But sexual orientation turns out to be very fluid, as evidenced by the changed lives of thousands of men and women. In fact, there are many women who've spent many years in long-term, sexually committed relationships with other women. And then they change, and they become attracted to males. Some of them have, they get married to men. They have kids, you know. In fact, I know some of these women. There's also men who have been sexually attracted to other men since puberty. They spend a decade or more in gay relationships, and then they develop attractions to the opposite sex. And many of these people have gone either through some form of therapy or counseling, but there's even some of them that have just had spontaneous changes without any kind of professional intervention. And again, I know some of these people. Some of them are good friends of mine. So these aren't just people that I'm talking about that are, you know, out there in the world, but nobody knows who they really are. And so the fact that even one person has changed is evidence that homosexuality is not hardwired. But that there's thousands of individuals who have changed is significant counter evidence against the born that way theory. And again, I know many of these guys. They can't all be lying. They're not all making this up. And so it seems, after kind of evaluating the evidence, that the Christian holdouts, as they call us, were right. Homosexuals are not born that way. But now that we've come to realize this with greater conviction, I think we need to more than ever reach out with compassion to these people who are not born that way. And I hope that's something that the church in the future takes seriously, about saying, hey, look, yes, now we know what the truth is, but we need to reach out with compassion. And again, that's a whole other topic to be discussed later on. So anyways, I'll talk to you next month on the Thinking Out Loud podcast.
You've been listening to Stand to Reason. Our podcasts and radio program are made possible by friends of this ministry through their generous support. You can support STR by making a gift online at str.org.